This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carol Van Dam, and here's what's coming up.
The verdict has been announced about Mr. Sonko being sentenced to 2 years, in jail for what we call for corrupting young people.
That's reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar, Senegal, on a court acquitting a top opposition leader of rape charges, but finding him guilty of what's called corrupting youth. Also, judges in Tunisia protest against the president's alleged interference in the judicial system, and the United States says it's imposing economic sanctions and visa restrictions against certain Sudanese individuals. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. The United States said today it is imposing economic sanctions and visa restrictions against leading combatants in Sudan's conflict as the latest ceasefire appeared to be in tatters and talks between the warring parties collapsed. Washington had warned the army and the rival paramilitary rapid support forces of punitive actions if the truce was undercut by violence. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said the worsening situation raises concerns of what he calls a protracted conflict and widespread suffering at the hands of the security forces. Witnesses reported an increase in fighting early today in various parts of the capital, Khartoum. That included a rocket attack on a market that left at least 18 dead and over 100 wounded, the biggest civilian death toll for a single incident since fighting began on April 15th. Saudi Arabia and the U.S. have been monitoring the latest ceasefire, which was to hold until Saturday evening. The army has pulled out of talks brokered by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. The truce brought some reduction in fighting and gave space for limited humanitarian relief, but has been marred by clashes and airstrikes. Previous ceasefires collapsed before they even took hold. The United Nations says more than 1.2 million people have been displaced since the fighting began, and another 400,000 have fled across the borders. At least 730 people have been killed. A court in Dakar, Senegal, today acquitted top opposition politician and presidential hopeful Ousmane Sonko of allegations of rape and making death threats, but sentenced him to 2 years in prison for corrupting youth. Sonko was accused of raping a woman who worked in a massage parlor in 2021 and making death threats against her. He denied wrongdoing and boycotted all court proceedings. Reporter Alpha Jallo, who is in Dakar, tells me that spontaneous protests are happening all across the Senegalese capital, especially at the university, following today's announcement.
See, I just passed there, but it was so hot between the students and the riot police. And also, where I am not far away from Tillen, which is also inside Dakar, there's also some demonstrations. The verdict has been announced about Mr. Sonko being sentenced to 2 years, in jail for what we call for corrupting young people.
And before we get into the specifics of the verdict, just going on with what you saw today, have those demonstrations that you just described, have they been peaceful?
Yes, the one at the university is very violent because I can see that, a black smoke, smoldering almost everywhere. So it is very difficult even for motorists, to drive. Also, all those, business centers around the university area, they have all shut up their shops and they are all heading home. And most offices today, even inside Dakar, most offices haven't gone to work. Immediately the verdict has been pronounced, some people, they quickly, left their offices heading home. So I am also getting news that in Pikin, which is the outskirts of Dakar, and Gejewaye and also Tengej, there are also some demonstrations.
Does this verdict mean that Mr. Sonko cannot run in next year's presidential elections, or can he appeal this verdict, this two-year sentence, which is not on rape, as you point out, and still run?
Just a few minutes ago, I heard one of his lawyers, Pal, who is also the spokesperson for his passive party, the Patriots. He said that they are going to appeal. But then it is also in the Senegalese judiciary system, if somebody is tried in absentia, it is always difficult for him to do the verdict. But they said that since he is cleared from the criminal allegations, maybe they can appeal to the higher court. That's what he said. And in a very short period, they will announce a press briefing, and people will know, I mean, what is their next move.
Sanko's supporters say the charges against him are politically motivated. What does the government say? And if you could, describe what the court means by corrupting youth, this charge that he was found guilty of.
That's very funny to describe, because this is what is surprising so many people. They said that since the beginning of this case in February 2021, and so many people, about 20 people lost their lives, during this series of violence. And of course, so many businesses were vandalized, so a lot of destruction. So if this case is ending here, saying that Mr. Sonko is only charged for corrupting young people. Well, I talked to somebody who said that, I mean, corrupting young people means maybe, I mean, giving them money in order to get, you know, what the person wants from them, whether it is, I mean, maybe he was cleared of the rape allegation. Sarah's lawyer is still maintaining Mr. Sonko and her client, they had some intimate, very close relationship, and then something have, you know, transpired between them.
That is reporter Alpha Jallo. He was speaking to me earlier today from Dakar. Tunisia's Magistrates Association marked the anniversary of President Kais Saied firing 57 judges by protesting against presidential control of the judicial system, degradation of the rule of law, and imprisonment of judges. Reporter Alicia Volkman has more from Tunis.
Today we are marking 1 year since 57 judges were sacked by the president. Judge Anas Hamedi, president of the Magistrates Association, led the protest by judges at the Palace of Justice in the centre of Tunis. 1 year ago, President Kais Saied dismissed 57 judges and 13 came under investigation allegations of corruption, including a female judge who was charged with adultery. 6 weeks later, Saied changed the constitution, bringing the judiciary and the justice system entirely under his control. Despite the Court of Administration ruling in favour of the judges and ordering that they be reinstated, the president has refused to comply. As the thunder rumbled, the judges called for a free judiciary and the return to the rule of law. They are also demanding for the release of Judge Bashir Akrimi, who was arrested and imprisoned for alleged involvement in the assassination of politician Shokri Belaid in a terrorist attack in 2013. His wife was present holding a poster with his photograph. The judges say they are being pressured to work according to the president's wishes and to open investigations and try cases that are political in nature. After the democratic revolution in 2011, the constitution of 2014 made the judiciary an independent authority. The judges want to return to that principle and to be a self-regulating power and to judge according to the law. The protest comes one day after a judge opened yet more investigations into some 20 of Saied's alleged political opponents, including Ennahda party leader Rashid Ghannouchi, who is already serving a one-year sentence for glorifying terrorism, former Prime Minister Youssef Shahed, and Saied's former Chief of Staff Nadia Akesha.
Sous la peur. Judges
are under so much pressure now. They're afraid. Really, we're being terrorized. We want to return to normal judicial process, equitable trials under the rule of law. Judge Madame Rautha Khalifa explained that working conditions for judges are worse than ever. They claim they're bullied and used as pawns in a political game they never asked to play.
That was reporter Alicia Volkman in Tunis. In a new report, Human Rights Watch accuses local authorities and Amhara forces in the western Tigray zone of northern Ethiopia of continuing an ethnic cleansing campaign against Tigrayans well after the November truce agreement was signed. Letitia Bader, HRW's Deputy Director for Africa, tells me that the aid group wants to see the Ethiopian government suspend, investigate, and prosecute security forces and officials that are taking part in the ongoing abuses.
We've interviewed over 30 people who were themselves former detainees who were forcibly expulsed from detention facilities by local Amhara administration and security forces, either in November, so after the signing of the truce, or also in January this year. So it's basically based on their testimonies. Many of these individuals had been in detention for over a year. So we had already published a report documenting what was waves of forced expulsions, massive arbitrary detention, sexual violence against Tigrayans in Western Tigray zone last year. And what this report looks at is basically what we're finding to be a continuation of this ethnic cleansing campaign.
When you say ethnic cleansing, what are actually these local authorities and Amhara forces accused of doing?
Well, there's been a whole range of measures which have been taken and serious violations meted out against the Tigrayan population. What we've documented in the most recent campaign is the ongoing unlawful detentions of Tigrayans. So they have been detained purely because of their identity. They have been held in horrific detention conditions, notably in the border town of Humera, where we documented complete lack of access to water, to food. Detainees were dying in detention as a result of the conditions. We also found that some of the prison guards subjected them to torture. We documented two cases in which the prison authorities executed detainees following a prison break. So we really are talking about horrific conditions. Now,
when we talk about some of these horrific conditions, are you talking about after the agreement was signed and peace was reportedly in place in the area?
So the cases of extrajudicial executions, for example, happened before. But what we found was that there were new waves of forced expulsions. So shortly after the signing of the agreement, but then also 2 months later. And we have continued to document threats, intimidations against Tigrayans who have managed in one way or another to remain in the zone. So we have actually interviewed a handful of people who have fled more recently, and they've fled because of ongoing threats and harassments they were facing by the authorities there.
What you're describing sounds to most people as though they are violating international law. Is that what you're accusing them of?
Absolutely. I mean, in our first report, which we released last year with Amnesty International, we found that the crimes which had committed as part of this ethnic cleansing campaign were crimes against humanity and war crimes. Secretary of State Blinken has himself characterized the events in Western Tigray zone as an ethnic cleansing campaign. And some of the most worrying findings of this more recent report is that two of the individuals that we named in our report last year, who were directly overseeing these abuses, sometimes actually directly involved in the abuses in detention in particular, are still in their positions of power.
That is Letitia Bader. She is Deputy Director for Africa at Human Rights Watch, in charge of the Horn and the Sudans. She was speaking with me earlier today from Rome. The Ethiopian government, meanwhile, today has not responded to requests for reaction to the HRW report from VOA's Horn of Africa service. However, in the past, the government has rejected most such allegations. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. In South Africa, a judge is expected to rule soon on a request for an order that would, in theory, compel the government to arrest Russian President Vladimir Putin if he visits that country. The International Criminal Court, or the ICC, has issued an arrest warrant for Putin, accusing him of war crimes in Ukraine. The Russian leader has accepted an invitation to attend the annual summit of the BRICS countries in Johannesburg and Cape Town in August. Darren Taylor has more.
South Africa signed the Rome Statute, which established the ICC in 2002. As such, it's obliged to arrest alleged war criminals and surrender them to the court. But the African National Congress government says it'll never arrest Putin, saying it would be a declaration of war on Russia. On Tuesday, opposition party the Democratic Alliance, the DA, applied to the Johannesburg High Court for a judgment to force the state to take Putin into custody should he arrive in August.
I mean, legally, I guess, but politically, I mean, I don't think that that's possible politically. I just have to be honest, I can't see that happening.
Professor Dire Tladi is a legal expert at the University of Pretoria and a fellow at the Institute of Comparative and International Law in Africa. He expects the DA's application to succeed because South Africa's ICC law is clear that it must execute the court's warrants. But Tladi doubts this will result in Putin's arrest. He adds, however, the diplomatic immunity that the government extended to Putin on Monday does not override any existing international arrest warrants.
Unless the government is able to challenge successfully the purported request for a declaratory order by the Democratic Alliance, then I guess, you know, as a matter of law, you can't hide behind immunity for not arresting a sitting head of state.
In 2015, the South African government ignored an ICC war crimes arrest warrant for Sudan's then president, Omar al-Bashir, allowing him to leave an African Union meeting in Johannesburg to fly back to Khartoum. Now Pretoria says it cannot be expected to violate its neutrality in the Ukraine war by arresting Putin. Professor of International Law at the University of Johannesburg, Henny Strydom, says this is a weak argument.
Neutrality is a totally separate issue. It's got nothing to do with the country's obligations in terms of a multilateral treaty. It cannot use a neutrality not to comply with its obligations.
He says the government appears to be rushing to amend its ICC laws so that sitting heads of state are exempt from arrest on South African soil. But this is unlikely to happen in time for the BRICS summit.
I'm on record stating publicly that I do not think that President Putin will come to South Africa. But with regard to the latest developments, I think the chances are extremely good that he will come to South Africa for the BRICS summit. And I think it's in view of that event that we really need clarity on what South Africa's legal position is with regard to the immunity issue concerning President Putin.
Tladi expects the ANC administration to ignore both the ICC warrant and the court judgment. He says it'll then probably be found in contempt of court, with Putin safely back home, but with further damage to South Africa's international reputation. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Political parties in Zimbabwe are starting to gear up for their campaigns now that President Emmerson Mnangagwa has announced that the Southern African nation will hold its general election on August 23rd. Columbus Mavunga has this report from Harare.
Depending on which party you are talking to, some are raring to go, but others are not 100% ready to begin. Linda Masarira is the founder of the opposition Labour Economists and African Democrats. She says she's now finalizing names to field.
They're now in the campaign mode, and we're just advising all other political parties in Zimbabwe to be tolerant, peaceful, and to thrive, to be united in our diversity. Differing in a political ideology or political preference doesn't mean enmity. Let's go to elections and campaign without bloodshed.
Fadzai Mahere is from the country's main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change. She says her party wants the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission to be non-partisan. But she says regardless, her party will be the ruling party likely on August 23.
We conducted the biggest voter registration campaign, which saw over 2 million brand new voters being added to the voters' roll. We also ran a global advocacy that has seen us mobilizing key states, particularly within SADC and on the continent, to ensure that they also monitor the situation and ensure that the election in Zimbabwe meets the standard of the SADC guidelines on elections. So we are ready. We know that ZANU-PF can never win a free and fair election in Zimbabwe, and so we're ready to fight to win Zimbabwe for change.
Tafazwa Mugwadi is spokesman for the ruling ZANU-PF party.
ZANU-PF and President Mnangagwa are ready for victory. We have done our homework. Our mobilization has been scientific, methodical. We are the party of the people. We are the party for development. We are the party of national unity. We are the party of focus. And we are proud to be led by a visionary, a torchbearer in Comrade E.D. Mnangagwa. And that meant we are going to vote on 23 August 2023.
Mnangagwa took over from the late long-serving President Robert Mugabe with the assistance of the army in 2017. Harare-based independent political analyst Gibson Nyikadzino says the Electoral Commission has done all it can within its legal mandate.
Political parties, they are eager to participate, but when you look at some, they haven't released the list of their candidates who are going to represent them because the internal democratic processes or the internal selection processes have been taking so long. And this might be a disadvantage, especially relating to the Citizens Coalition for Change, because you'd need time to mobilize resources, you'd need time to galvanize the party, you'd need time to clearly articulate the idea why you want people to vote for you.
Zimbabwe's August 23 general election takes place at a time when some are not happy with the ailing economy, power cuts, and high cost of living. Some seem to be benefiting from Mnangagwa's policies, though a large number remain in poverty. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
And that wraps it up for this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mukbil Yarborough, and our engineer, Atreus Regis, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05.